The views, information, and opinions expressed are those of the featured guests and not those of IG Wealth Management.
I'm Manjeet Minhas, one of Canada's top entrepreneurs, and so excited for you to join us today. Through a wealth of women's stories, IG is carving out a space where women's voices are heard. If you're looking for insight and inspiration through powerful storytelling that will resonate with anyone looking for the answers to the questions that we as women ask ourselves, then this series is for you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to season 3. I'm so excited to kick off our first episode with Paulina Cameron, a CPA, CA, CEO, board director, advisor, investor, and visionary. As CEO of The Forum, she leads a Canadian national organization that educates, mentors, and connects women entrepreneurs to thrive. She's the chair of the board of the Immigrant Employment Council of BC and serves on the board of directors for the YWCA Vancouver and the government of BC's Small Business Roundtable. She has won numerous awards and has been recognized in the community by being selected as Business in Vancouver's Top 40 Under 40 and was awarded BC's Business Most Influential Women in Finance Award. It's a mouthful. Welcome to the podcast, Paulina. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Thank you, Manjeet. I'm so excited to be here with you.
So you've had quite an accomplished career that has taken you in a couple different directions, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about your journey and the impact that you've had on so many women thus far. So why don't we start a bit at the beginning? Why don't you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and a little bit about how you got your career started?
Yeah, happy to. And it's, you know, funny, I think a lot of people who know me now, when they see that my background or that I even have a CPA, they're like, I don't know. I don't know how to connect those dots for you. And, you know, it's a bit of a superpower. It's like a secret superpower, but it's a story that maybe isn't too unfamiliar, because I'm actually a first generation immigrant. I was born in Poland, and my parents fled communism with me when I was a baby. We actually came through a refugee and immigration camp in Italy before we came to Canada. And I don't think it's necessarily a unique story that a child of an immigrant goes, let's get a profession and let's do what is safe and what is known. And my parents knew accounting, and I happened to be decently good at math. Little did I know that I actually don't really need to be good at math for accounting, but you know, that's another story. But I went with what I knew. And ironically, my sister is also now a doctor, though she's very happily chosen doctor and down that path. But I quickly realized that while I like knowing the numbers and that is so valuable, I was also really interested in broader business and operations and people and leadership. And I really wanted my work to be more closely connected with making an impact and really mattering, like feeling my day to day and what I was doing. And as someone who has ADHD and runs a pretty high energy and optimism, that really lends itself to the spirit of entrepreneurship really, really well. And so I was working at a big four accounting firm for a number of years. And when I left that cold turkey, because at the time I had no kids and no mortgage back then, it really gave me a bit of space to do a bit of self-work around what are my strengths? What are industries I really love? Where can I really contribute and be a really strong performer in? And so it first led me to an organization that does loans for young entrepreneurs. While I was doing that, I also ran an organization that supported women's professional development. I ran a food delivery business. So I had a few tentacles along the way. And I would say my time here at The Forum really marries my deep passion for seeing women succeed and seeing women thrive with my belief that business can be such a tool, which I think you would agree with me on this, Manjeet. Business can be such a tool for women being able to write their own destinies and be able to be economically and socially and impactfully empowered and make that impact as well. So it's kind of a really beautiful sweet spot of those two things for me.
I love that your story actually not only resonates with so many, but I understand it. I'm born here, but as a child of immigrants, I totally get the safety net of an education, but also understanding how that can be the backbone of having the confidence to try a bunch of different things and having that kind of fallback, that safety, I'm doing in air quotes here, just because it gave you obviously the ability to explore a variety of different things that you were curious about, to see maybe what you had some passion for, some expertise for, but then also where you could find out more about yourself. And I love that you've done a variety of different things, because there's too many people who advise that haven't really been there and done that, as in put worn those shoes that those they're advising of. And I love that you can say that, yeah, I've done that, and I kind of know what struggles you're having and what this path might be. It just lends to more authentic, not only leadership, but also allyship, mentorship, sponsorship, like all the things that you have definitely done for a lot of others. So you've been leading the forum for about 4 years now. And can you tell me like what it stands for and why all of those experiences that you talk about led to the forum?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the organization started 21 years ago in BC, and since it has grown quite a lot and has taken so many different shapes. And what feels really right is that it has always stood, or really true rather, is that it has always stood on the same principles, and that is the principles of believing in women, believing in their visions, and believing in the change that they can make in their families, their communities, and the economy when they are provided with the resources and connections they need. We're a registered charity. The organization is a registered charity. And this structure, what it really allows us to do, and I'm always so careful to say this because I don't want anyone to ever think that the women are the charitable cause, because that is not it at all. What it really allows us to do is that it allows us to activate a tremendous community of supporters and champions to step into the work of providing women with all the different forms of capital, financial capital, wisdom capital, social capital, inspiration capital that they need to succeed. It's kind of like really our job is to get out of their way, make sure they have what they need, and work on everything around them to really see their visions come forward. And our work is to do that through a number of programs that we run that are open to all self-identifying women entrepreneurs across Canada. We have about 1,600 that access our programs each year, and they join a community of now over 10,000 alumna when they do so. So not only are our programs really always evolving because we're iterating and learning, our model is all about bringing incredible experts in. And I will say, and I'm sure you see this all the time, Angie, but the peer connections and the peer communities that happen is where the magic happens, right? Like, my goodness, the journey of entrepreneurship is all the images that we see. I'm waving my hands around madly of things flying up and down the roller coasters and the loneliness and the decision fatigue and the, am I crazy to think this, or nobody's ever experienced this. I must be, you know, I should not be doing this business. I don't know the answer, so I shouldn't be doing it. And when we can bring that community together so that you don't have to experience those feelings alone, and you can really quickly realize that they are both really normal, and you can learn from others' experience in it, there's a really magical piece that happens. I mean, there's so many examples that I can share, but one of the things I love, you know, we measure the things that matter, like job creation and revenue growth and sustainability. Mm-hmm. But my favorite thing that we measure is how much more confident do you feel and how much more connected do you feel by being through one of the programs and community? Because in my viewpoint, those two things, yes, you need a, you know, cash flow, you need your marketing plan. Yes, yes, yes. But if you feel more confident and if you feel more connected, you're going to be able to pursue the path ahead and feel good about it. So those are my two markers, and, you know, amazing things happen from it.
Yeah, agreed. I really do think that there's so much to be said about the confidence and connected piece, because you hit it on the nose that when you say entrepreneurship is lonely, and it is lonely for anybody, but it is even more lonely for women because often they're juggling a variety of other things, including a family and kids and spouses and aging parents and a ton of things, you know, laundry, cooking, the list goes on. And sometimes when you're having to do all of that, plus start and run a business, you can feel like you're the only one dealing with a lot of that decision fatigue, imposter syndrome, like all those titles that we have for. But at the end of the day, it's a tough place to be, especially when you're starting out and you're often in a bubble.
I love the way you've pointed to that judgmental piece because I think it's both a judgmental piece and what I see a lot is that women are pitted against each other too, right? And so there's only so much, and we certainly know the data that shows that there's only so much being, like, you know this so well, less than 4% of venture capital is going to white women entrepreneurs, under 1% to historically excluded founders. When it comes to loans, I read this the other day and I had to like reread it two times because it blew my mind a little bit. For loans, the average amount of financing that is authorized for male-owned businesses is about 150% higher than for women-owned businesses. Yet show me a household budget that a woman does not manage to a T with all the coupon clippings and does so well at it, right? Like, we know actually it's a strength for women. And so I think it actually is so important to have these conversations in a different way because there is that tendency for both judgment or shame or even a mindset of scarcity to come in. And so one of the ways that we really like to talk about it is to actually remind women what they do have going for them. My colleague was running one of our workshops last week and she was introducing the concept to the group. And she began by actually asking women to first identify. So she introduced the concept of all the various capitals. So to first identify what types of capital they already have. Okay, so like who do I know? What kind of learning have I experienced? And not just, you know, the resume ticking boxes, but my gosh, if you have been staying at home for a while, caring for others, your logistical and organizational skills and your communication and your planning. So really giving women the opportunity to actually first tap into themselves and see their strengths and see their wisdom for a moment so that you could begin thinking about this from a place of abundance as opposed to a place of scarcity. Because scarcity does funny things to our brain. And scarcity is what goes, I can't do this. I'm alone. There's no options. I have no options. I can't think of anything. And then we flight, freeze, fawn, all the Fs, all the fears, all the feelings come out. And so it's so important, I think, that coming at it first from the place of abundance, and it's why we spend so much time as an organization and like each of my individual team members meeting women where they're at first and hearing their story and reflecting that even back to them, you know, like having a moment of like, wow, that's so amazing that you've moved through that, or like, gosh, it sounds like it's been really hard and you showed up for this call. Like, way to practice that courage, way to put your hand up and go, I'm under the water here. I need support. And so I think approaching it from that place first and getting us into that abundance and seeing the possibility really helps so that we can then think about options and actually use the resources. You know, when I joined the organization 4 years ago, I kept hearing from entrepreneurs, I never knew you existed. And I said to my team, like, my one goal right now is let's not be the best kept secret, because it's not about us and our organization. It's about women knowing that support exists, that community exists, and then making sure that they feel that they can put their hand up and use it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was talking to a group of MBA students last week, and I kept saying to them is that the rest of your career path, no matter what it be, whether it be entrepreneurship, whether it be working for another organization or whatever it might be, but most of your battle, the rest of your life will just be showing up. If you show up, you literally are winning already. And I saw, you know, in the beginning when I started talking, some confused faces. But as they get older and go through life, I'm sure they will discover that is truly more than half the battle is just showing up and showing up with all of you, with all of your intention, with all of your attention, which is really, really fascinating that nobody told me that until I was much older in life.
I love that so much. I think you're so right. It's showing up even when you like don't know what you're going to say, how you're going to do it, right? Like any of those pieces. What's that great quote? Like speaking even when your voice is quivering and going,
And that kind of goes along with the thoughts that I've heard you guys say, which is when women thrive, we all do, and leave no woman behind. Can you maybe expand on those? Because they're very empowering ideas and a set of, you know, 6 words and 4 words that mean a lot more than meets the eye.
Yeah, you know, the words really help us guide a lot about how we think about what we are doing, but also the how we are doing it. And really, again, providing women with the opportunity to see themselves in that as well. I think sometimes we get asked the question of, you know, where is the forum for men entrepreneurs and where is these spaces? And I go, what's so important about these spaces and the way they are created and why they exist and what they enable is that they create an opportunity to feel safe and to feel like there's an accountable space and a brave space to bring all of ourselves to that table. And yes, we want to talk about, you know, the best marketing strategy, how to optimize cash flow, and how to integrate the values. And we want to talk about how to transform the systems that collectively don't work for women. And we want to talk about our care responsibilities and how we're holding all of the balls that you were mentioning earlier and actually have that be a part of it. And I think when women can see themselves in the conversations and are actually part of them, it really is transformative.
Gotcha. So 5 years ago, you wrote a book and published it, a Canadian bestseller that was called Canada's 150 Women, Conversations with Champions, Leaders, and Luminaries. And so it's an incredible collection. I've read tidbits of women's stories. And so what inspired you to write this book and why highlight women's contribution to the fabric of Canada?
You know, I've always been so inspired by stories of women and learning from them. I feel like I just collect them. And this idea, gosh, like some ideas just really come out of nowhere, it feels like. And I knew one person in the publishing world that I reached out to and said, I have this crazy idea. What would it take? What could it look like? And then 8 months later, we were sold out on bookshelves. And so it was really following the spirit and energy of that. And for me, why it feels so important that we capture stories and capture words. I mean, if one, I think it's really hard for a lot of us to toot our own horns. And so having someone else do it for us is great. And two, like if you Google CEO or entrepreneur or scientist, there's still a specific image that more often than not is what comes up to. And, you know, I myself couldn't even name the woman who had done so much to contribute. And I wanted to know more of them. And I learned by doing. So I'm a doer. And that was my best way to go through the experience.
Yeah. You know, you interviewed university presidents, business leaders, sports figures, former premiers, prime minister. And so what was it like getting their firsthand knowledge, experience, journey? And like you say, maybe not who we all, even as accomplished women ourselves, think of first in those roles. Like that had to be pretty inspiring, but also pretty remarkable in the fact that sometimes I know I find myself kicking myself, like, why didn't I already know this?
Mm-hmm. It was an amazing experience. You know, I really set out to try to ask questions that might be different than what are typically asked, because I wanted to also share like the complexity and the fullness that we all are as humans and provide women with the opportunity to do that. And it was such an honor, the stories that the women chose to share. And I remain like pretty firm in this belief that I think documenting the words of women and the works of women, that's our way of making sure that we make it into history. And there's so many stories that felt so meaningful to me that the women chose to share. You know, there was a woman, and you actually probably are familiar with her, Manjeet, who was the first woman premier in Alberta. And she shared a really incredible story. I actually think about it quite often about when she was, before she ran for politics and kind of imagining this world, she really loved wearing these really colorful cardigans and blazers. And it was something that she, you know, had grown up with and was really meaningful and important to her. And, you know, the world of politics is mostly gray and black suits. And yeah, to be at those tables and to be especially I think in that time, though I think I would argue probably still today, there is a certain level of fitting in that needs to happen to be able to have and play the game that is needed at those tables. And she had shared that she, in reflecting now on her experience, had wondered, like, when could she have brought back those colorful blazers? And I think it's such a powerful testament again to, as we're trying to navigate like these systems that weren't built or designed for us, and we're trying to balance some version of like playing the game to make it in there versus throw it all out and create new worlds and new ways and find ourselves amidst those too. It is hard to balance and shift and still stay like real and authentic to ourselves. And so I was also like, a hope that I had is that the stories allowed women to maybe see bits of themselves in that and maybe imagine, oh gosh, like if she was able to or could do that or had wished she had done that, maybe that could give me a little bit more courage and strength to do so too.
Yeah, I love that story because I actually totally identify with it because my first season on Dragon's Den almost 9 years ago, that was something that I had to fight for too because I was asked, like everybody else previous 10 years before me, that wore muted, you know, tones of black and white and gray. And I said, no, I'm going to wear red. And oh my God, did everybody's head flip. And it's interesting how some small detail, unless you've been through it yourself, it's not that small. It means so much. It meant so much to me to wear a dress and then if for it to be red, because same thing, color is a part of my world and it is me. And it's how I express through fashion is who and what I am. And so I think that my individuality, and it's so interesting that lots of others around me didn't really get it, including my own brother, until after the fact. And I was exhausted in some days wondering, why am I fighting for this so hard? And then, you know, it's one of those things that no matter who you are, though, people think that, oh, well, you know, your title, your stature, your success should allow you to do and be whoever you want to be. Not always the case, though, especially for women.
Totally. And if no one else has done it, it is the battle to then totally do it differently. And not only you were doing it for yourself, which is so important. Like, I think it's so important to do these things for ourselves. And you were doing it for any girl who is subsequently then seeing you on the screen being like, of course she wears red on the screen. And of course I'm going to.
Right. It's funny. And it's sometimes interesting in a moment in time, the things that you decide as a woman to kind of literally dig your heels in on, and just some just kind of go, okay, not worth the fight. But then afterwards, I'm like, I don't believe in regrets by any means. But I do believe sometimes, you know, we all take the easier path sometimes, not to get our blood pressure through the roof. But it is something that when you hear others win at those same challenges, it inspires you to maybe the next time around.
Totally. Because both roads are hard. Like either, it's hard because you're digging your heels in and needing to do the work for that, or it's hard because you probably are compromising something that's really important to you. And that's hard too, because that's like hard for heart, right? Like that self-disappointment and what you're putting on the line there. So you are choosing a hard. Yeah.
True. In your book and your work with the Forum, you definitely promote and champion women leaders in a variety of different ways. And I definitely am all for women supporting women. And so why do you feel that it's something that we have to continue to champion for women in leadership roles as entrepreneurs, C-suite executives, thought leaders? Like many people might say to you that, oh, are we not there already? Do we not, you know, haven't we reached parity in so many different ways? We've reached those metrics, those goals. So why do you think that it's still important for us to focus on that?
Yeah, I've heard that before. I've heard, oh, you know, business will take care of it. Market will take care of it. It will happen if it's, or, you know, the argument of, if they're worth it, or if they are at the right levels, it will all happen. And, you know, I have a few answers around it. I often find that even though my instinct, I want to like get at them with data. I'm like, but do you know how many dollars on the cents women still make and don't make? And do you know what it is for Indigenous and Black women? And like, I kind of want to hit them with the facts. And I have found that while we keep thinking that the business case is going to make a difference, we talk about, you know, if we could unlock, even in just in Canada alone, unlock women's economic potential, $150 billion would flow to our economy. We talk about, you know, 87 cents on the dollar is what a white woman in Canada makes to a man of any racial background, let alone Indigenous or Black women. So we know these things, and yet they don't seem to make much of a dent. The business case of it doesn't seem to be what works. There's some sort of unlocking, I think, in the cultural and the values perspective, in how we see women's contributions holistically, that still really needs a shift and an upgrade. And until we really value care work and care in all of its, all of the ways that it comes forward, right? Not just childcare, elder care in communities, like who is actually investing in our communities? Who's volunteering? Who is, you know, what kind of industries are women going into? So until we start really valuing that so holistically, I think it will be really hard to change. And why is it so important? For the exact reasons why it hasn't flipped. I mean, so many of our economies and so many of our jobs depend on care, depend on the kind of work that women are doing. There's a great statistic that I always forget exactly what it is, but it's something like, 97% of volunteering is done by women. And that is work that like truly enables us all to be human together, right? Like it's what makes libraries run. It's like crosswalks in school. Like there's so many examples of it beyond just caring for immediate family at homes, which is also so deeply important because it's raising our next generation. We know that there will be different kinds of decision-making, and we know that different kinds of models of power and leadership then come forward. And it can't be about tokenism. And so we need enough women and more women. Will there ever be enough? I don't know. I don't think so for me. But there's a saying of see it, be it for a reason. And I think we need those role models and examples, and we need intersectionality. Intersectionality here is so important. Seeing someone who has your actual similar background and lived experience, that's when it makes us feel like it could really be possible.
I totally agree. I'm a big champion of you can't be what you can't see. Mm-hmm. Because you don't even think of it as a possibility for so many reasons, unfortunately. And I saw a stat that really shocked me, that 70% of women reported that they learned the most important lessons about leadership from other women. And it's interesting because we think so much of leadership as something that is really not gender specific. It is the idea of leading a group to success, an organization, you know, about focusing on the numbers, like all of those things that we see on paper. But the actual learning of how to be a leader and how to inspire others to be their best is interesting, that we see that many women see that only from other women. They don't get that same feeling and or education from their male counterparts in their careers, which was a bit surprising to me.
It's so interesting. I was thinking, when I think about this stat, what comes up to me is like, I think our notions around leadership used to be really one-dimensional. So it used to be like kind of exactly what you said. It's like, how do you lead the marketing strategy? How do you drive the P&L? How do you do this? And I think we're really, really learning and understanding how much more relational it is as opposed to transactional. And I think the skills of being relational are absolutely skills that are often, you know, the feminine or women typically have, because they spend so much time in care. And care in and of itself, any kind of care activities are relational, human to human activities. And so I think what we understand of leadership is really shifting from more being around the power over the transactional, to be power with, to be relational, to be empowering. Like those are the words that we now more hear and associate with leadership. And I certainly definitely the next generation is going, yeah, that's what we want to see more of. And that's what we really care about. And I think, you know, there's something there in that quote and that stat for me too, that makes me think about how I think so many male leaders in the past, like that was their thing that they did. Like they kind of were able to operate in a silo because they had care at home that was separately taken care of home. So like that was the thing. Versus a lot of women are holding and juggling all these pieces and don't have the equivalent of their wife at home. They usually also have a working spouse. Yes, have some support, but it is different. And so the mental load that they carry is different. And so it doesn't surprise me necessarily that they learn about leadership from other women who also carry that mental load and are going, here's how to hold all these pieces. Here's how I navigate it. Here's like how I hold deep care and space for an employee who's having a hard day, and then a three-year-old who's melting down because I cut their banana wrong, right? And so this makes sense to you if leadership is about to be is about the relational, and about the power with, and about the engaging. all that complexity we would be learning from and applying.
Yeah, interesting. So more focus on what is traditionally referred to as the soft skills. And as I like to call it, work-life integration into leadership rather than, you know, this is your 9-to-5 and this is how we excel right here and the rest of the world is not factored in to the 9-to-5 here, which is, yeah, I guess not the case anymore for sure. So I'm going to shift gears a bit to the younger generation. So you are the co-founder of the Young Women in Business. And so the KPMG study said that 91% of working women indicated that it's important to them to be a positive role model for younger females in the workplace. And so why do you think that, you know, networking, workshops, panels are so important to helping young women reach their potential? Like, why is that something that there should be more of a focus on, not just that outside the work mentorship piece?
Mm-hmm. We were talking about earlier how much relationships drive everything. And I feel the same way. Every opportunity I can trace back is to a relationship and to someone I've known. And so these are the kinds of activities that allow us to build our community and build our network, right? And create the new version of the old boys club and one that we can access and be part of and create that for ourselves. And I think it used to be pretty standard that men were really encouraged to do that. They were encouraged to build a book of business, to get out there and do business development. And women weren't in the same way. You know, Young Women Business started because we were all in university at the time, attending conferences, as you do. We were at the Sauder School of Business, and they do a great job of getting students out into the community and attending business events. And at that time, we would maybe see one token female speaker, woman speaker on the stage, right? Like maybe you would see the token here and there. And the first concept was actually to create a conference where every single speaker was a woman. And so I said, great, can we do the like textbook thing that we saw? We saw 3-day conferences downtown at hotels with like 300 people. Could we do that and all the speakers be women? What would that be and what would that look like? And it was incredible. The name of it at the time was Beyond Pink. And we really loved the energy that came forward. Like, probably no surprise to you, everyone showed up for it. It was the full sold out ballroom, had amazing reception and, you know, gave the opportunity for that. And then the organization really grew to have chapters and to be led by volunteer young women, where for the first time, it was their opportunity to lead a budget, to, you know, run a team meeting, so it was like actually leadership, experiential leadership. I kind of wish while I was running it, I had thought of it that way, but I think it was the best leadership academy that exists out there because it provided women with the opportunity to own a small, albeit, but to own like a P&L, to create a marketing strategy. Like it was a mini business in and of itself that they were doing, but also plugging into community, getting to know local business leaders, inviting them as speakers and as mentors. And so it provides again, women with the opportunity to use their voice, to get skills and skill sets, and to build those relationships that are going to be their unlockers.
And so why do you think it's important to educate the younger generation about entrepreneurship in particular? And do you think there's any misconceptions about what an entrepreneur is or does, especially amongst young people?
I think there's probably still some old school ones that exist. And it's like so interesting. I don't know if you see this too, but I find that the younger generation is actually challenging so many of them and throwing so many things out the window because they're wanting to do things differently or design things differently, or they're going, that makes no sense at all. Why did we always do it this way? And because things are changing so quickly, I actually feel sometimes they are more challenging some of the conceptions of how things used to be done, and probably for the better too. I think, I think one of the things I see a lot, and I do work predominantly with women entrepreneurs, is the reason why they are starting a business is almost always driven by like a deep need for changing something and making something for the better. So it's not only, you know, making the business to create jobs, to grow revenue, to create profit, but because they really want to change something that's not, that needs an impact, that needs a change. So it's kind of beyond triple bottom line. I mean, they're starting businesses and from the get-go, they're integrating living wages. They're thinking about give back strategies. They're thinking about community engagement and involvement. We did a study a couple of years ago and looked at how many women were thinking about integrating like values into the actual business model and operating model and structure. And it was something like we're thinking about it over 85% of the time versus men were under 40%. And so there was a really big difference there. And so I think some misconceptions that are around business is that it can't be used as a tool for good, but I disagree. And I think it can absolutely not only be used for as a tool for like a good and impact and also provide economic opportunity.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, I see a lot of people that come into the den, usually of the younger generation, and they talk about social enterprise. And many of us find ourselves saying over and over, you can't do anything with impact and, you know, have a social aspect to your business if there's no enterprise to begin with. And so we often find that they're focusing on the social aspect more than they're focusing on the enterprise. And we always got to say, you got to pay yourself and make some money in order to have some impact in whatever way that you want. And the fact that like you say, the triple bottom line and or what the metrics that we use as far as what is that definition of success, what is the definition of, you know, a business or an entrepreneur is definitely changing for sure, because often the goals of making hundreds of millions isn't necessarily the case. It is broader than that, which I think is really commendable, but different for sure.
Yeah, different things need to support it, right? There isn't one box or one path or even one way of doing it, which is why it feels so important that not only, you know, in our work, we're meeting women, entrepreneurs where they're at, we're asking them like, what does success need to look for you and how to build out that model around it? But then we're also advocating that the systems that support that change to meet women where they are at with their definitions of success too. And again, we've been talking about the see it to be it, or, you know, be seeing the different possibilities. I think we need to talk about the different stories and the different stories of how people thought about success and how they structured it and how they attained it and what they put in place to design around it.
Yes, yes, yes. It reminds me of something that I say a lot to my own team when we're talking to, you know, companies and individuals that we're investing in is I always say to them, don't treat others like you want to be treated. I think that many of us have a certain generation, I'm 42, we're taught that as a golden rule. But I truly believe the golden rule now is that you have to treat others like they want to be treated. You need to ask them, what do they want and what do they need? And that is a very different mindset and shift in not only in the way that we support entrepreneurs, but also women, to say that your expectations and what you want out of life is maybe different than I can imagine for you.
Mm-hmm. And knowing what each other's are, that's where the magic can happen. That's when you can find the right people.
Very, very true. So on the forum page, I saw that you wrote your favorite sanity saver is, I love catching the sunset and forest walks are my version of meditation. My kids' laughter brings me such joy, and my group texts with my girlfriends are a cornerstone. So that last comment about group texts with my girlfriends, why did you feel, and why do you feel that those open connections are crucial to a sanity saver, as you put it, and to success?
So, you know, that meme, I feel like it was going around a lot last year, that behind every successful woman is a group text blowing up at 2 a.m.
Yep.
It just feels so true. I mean, the places with my friends, and, you know, we don't all live in the same place and or even on the same time zones, which is actually really helpful. I think that might be a key to these text messages working extras, having diversity of time zones, because then there's like always someone available. But, you know, this is the place where I really get reminded of who I am, of my strengths, of my values. This is the place where I get encouraged to pursue opportunities. It's the place I can go to after hard times. And they're there. They talk me off a bajillion and a half ledges. They're the ones who also keep me honest, which is really important. They remind me when I'm going to take on too much and just remind me of like, hey, remember the time that you, that last time that you said yes to all these things and how you felt afterwards? But they also really mirror, like, they are the best sponsors because they will be the ones that go, yeah, go for that opportunity. Like, we will be here and hold you through what happens. That is so tremendously valuable because you can both be vulnerable and seen, and, you know, what do we all want to be seen and known. And that is the place where that can really happen. And I think it, for me, it feels really powerful that it's a group of fellow, like, ambitious, smart, amazing women that do it too. Because again, like, I want to live in a world where all the notions around women being catty or not supported one another are just entirely dispelled. And having that come from a deeply supportive place, not only of friends, but even like, you know, I lead a team of all women. And having that dispelled in these places feels really, really important. And for me, on a personal, but on a work front, that is where really success comes from, is from being seen, encouraged, and supported in the hard and the great moments.
Yeah, agreed. I definitely super agree with you. And I would adding some of the good laughs in, superficial, silly stuff, but sometimes it makes you feel like a whole person and that you're just not focused on, you know, whatever the task at hand is. Sometimes feels like you're connected to the rest of the Instagram, TikTok, whatever world is when you really don't have any time for it. You feel like you are just a person again. Or I find my group texts are great for saying, hey, we are going on X date for a trip. Your first reaction always is like, oh no, how am I going to do that? And then you feel like, oh, but I can't miss out on that. And then you make it happen. And when you come back, you're like, oh my God, like, thank God I needed that girl time. I love family time, but sometimes girl time is just different, right?
It's different.
When you're not worried about, have the kids eaten? Is your husband snoring and disturbing everybody, et cetera, et cetera, in the hotel room? And I think that, like, it is also that place where you can go and say, oh my God, I want to, you know, kill XYZ, and then just get it out. Often a big part of which I love my women groups text from, which sometimes my husband, my brother, or business partner, et cetera, don't sometimes get, is the fact that you often just need to get it out. You don't need a response back. You don't need them to solve the problem. You just need to say, oh, and then you can move on. And I feel like women sometimes get that a bit more.
Totally. You need them to just, like, join in the rant, right?
Another thing that I saw that really got me thinking and I loved on your website is, as CEO, you said you lead our vision, our strategy, and food orders. I love the addition of food orders. So talk to me as to why, like, this, it might sound silly, I get it, but as I started thinking about it, it really does suggest the community building aspect, the leadership style that you have, that you're all working together and you all got to eat.
So I will say, I think food is like its own love language category that whoever created the five love languages just forgot about, or clearly was probably a guy. I don't know, but I think it's its own love language. And as a team, we feel it. And, you know, you were talking earlier, Manjeet, about asking people what they need and what do they need. And I know this is a piece that makes a difference for my team, and that they do need, not only in terms of food orders, although I will say the Slack channel that we have where we review chip flavors is like so much fun. Oh my gosh, that channel is the best. But it's an example, and I think everyone's is different. This is just what is ours and our team. Like, that is a way that we express and see one another and have a point of connection around. And that feels really, it does feel really important to my leadership style. Yeah, community building, or that relational, and really giving space for us to be humans together and embracing it. You know, as I mentioned before, we're a team of all women, and I think it's the best thing ever. We are so functional and so ambitious, but and also, like, care deeply for one another and celebrate that, and recognize when we have that moments of humanity and be that. And I continue to hear from my team that when I share things that are happening, like, I will go, gosh, 911, I have to pick up a kid at work, or this or that, or, you know, I've cooked dinner during a meeting before when it's been in a pinch. Like, that is when they feel they have the permission slip to be humans as well. And that allows them to show up stronger. And that allows them to really step into that. And it's kind of a really different model from, I think, you know, the idea of a corner office and needing to go through two executive assistants to get time, or a hold of the CEO, and never really knowing who they are. But I know, like, what I hear from my team is that when we do these things differently, when we, you know, take an extra day off to celebrate to after like a transition. So for example, when we come out of summer, and a lot of my team members are moms too. I don't know about you, but sometimes after a summer with children.
Yes.
You need a day. You need a day. And so we take a day. We take a day because we know the work is going to be there and they're going to be so strong coming back into it. But it's again, knowing what your team, who they are, and what will really help them thrive, not only from a systems and technology and that perspective, but thrive as humans so that they can be their best. Like that really, really makes a difference. And I hear from the team how much they appreciate that.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. And I knew there was more intention there, just not a good laugh. And so, you know, I think it just kind of speaks volumes to your style and that how it is intentional. And I think that in a lot of different ways, sometimes maybe us in leadership positions don't sit back and think about all of the minor details that actually make a bigger impact and difference. In closing, any advice that you want to give to women entrepreneurs that we haven't touched on, things that we can do as women, as allies to support other women?
I feel like we really created a masterclass on reminding women that they don't have to be alone in figuring these pieces out. And my first thing is always like, find your people, start somewhere. Where you start also might not be the place where you find your people. So it might take a few times to do it. And don't be shy about that. Because finding the right people who will be in your corner, your community, but also like, here's a very random one. You can say no to like who your banker is and ask for a different banker. You can get a different accountant. You can get a different, like I also think sometimes I hear a woman being like, well, this is who I got. That's who I got to be with. And my encouragement is to really make it work for you and figure out what you need to be able to do that. And for everyone who wants to be an ally of women entrepreneurs, I've got a list. I've got a list of things you can do. And most of them are free, which is probably the best thing about them. But that is the simple things that make such a huge difference. And that's follow them on social media, talk about them, leave glowing reviews. Like if you have a friend who runs a business, get on their Google review page, get on their wherever they collect them, recommend them for media interviews, recommend them, put their name forward for awards. When they celebrate a milestone, like, you know, we show up for our friends' babies' birthdays, send them a milestone when it's a 2 or 3 year mark of surviving, running a business, send them a gift. Yeah. Let's have business showers. Let's do things that way. And, you know, just check in on them when there's weird stuff happening in the world, like when banks collapse or interest rates are at, you don't know if they're being impacted by them, but they're a business owner. So they're thinking about all these things. And just a text of saying, and you don't have to know anything about business. You can just say, it seems like there's a lot of weird things happening in the world of business. You're a business owner. I'm just thinking about you and hope you have a community around you that's supportive. Like so many of these things can make such a big difference. So that's my advice or call for anyone who wants to be an ally of a women-led business or any small business.
Yeah, I really, a couple things in there that definitely stand out for me. One is advocate for yourself. I totally agree. Nobody can know what you're thinking if you don't say it out loud. And yeah, you're right. Like just because they were handed to you, whether it be your banker or I will say, you know, just very recently, my father was in the hospital and I was like, you know what? I want a second opinion. And I think that, you know, not everybody took easily to that. But in the end of the day, it's one of those things that advocating for yourself and the fact that if you're feeling that, and I was, because I wasn't totally sure that I was agreeing. I'm not that I'm a doctor by any means, but I knew, you know, a little bit. And so I think that it can't hurt to ask and also be reassured, because many of us think afterwards, I should have said something. So I love the advocating for yourself. And then the simple questions, like I totally feel, even my friends who don't know business, but when they send me 3 words, it can make all the difference in my day. Simply, how are you? not knowing what is going on. If they get a sense of, like you say, you know, that the world is a tough place some days. And so I think that just having those open-ended questions is really how to be even an ally to those around you. Those are really quite fabulous tools. And also when you talk about small business, we all are thinking about marketing and how do we get the words out there. And we do that by supporting each other. I think everybody assumes that they don't need our help, but they do.
Totally. Yeah. And it all adds up. And we see it too. You know, those great memes of when you order from a small business, there's a person dancing in the background. It is true. It is true.
Yes, very true. Very true. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Paulina, for joining me today. I've learned so much, so many great tips you've given our listeners today. I truly do believe that business is a tool to write your own destiny. And I think that you have shown that for women in so many ways, and you continue to. Thanks to everybody for listening and tuning in. I encourage you to find the wealth in your own stories and be inspired by the phrase, no woman left behind. We look forward to having you back for our next episode presented by IG Wealth Management. You can learn more by visiting ig.ca/women and can also find that link in the description of this episode. Cheers. See you next time.
This has been a Wealth of Women Stories, hosted by Manjeet Minhas and presented by IG Wealth Management. The views, information, and opinions expressed are those of the featured guests and not those of IG Wealth Management.